Awesome. You know, every time that song comes on the radio, my daughter, who's 10, Maggie, when this line comes up, I hope my children come and visit once or twice a month. She'll literally put her hands on my shoulder and say, "Dad, don't worry. I'll at least come that many times when I'm older." And I love that moment because, you know, that's what we really long for, right, as parents? I mean, you hope that as you get through the parenting season, and if you're not a parent, you know, you one day may be here. If you are a parent of older children, you hope that, you know, once you're out of the active parenting stage, you get to a place where your kids just want to be your friends. And so today we're going to look at this. We're going to look at four stages that the kids must go through and parents must go through in order to get to the place of being lifelong friends. And so really excited you're here with us this morning. My name's Kurt, by the way. If we haven't met, it's great to meet you this morning. And last week, as we kicked this series off, we looked at how we have 1,000 weeks as parents from birth to graduation day to have an influence. So every week counts. And next week, we're going to begin over the next couple weeks. If you're not in the parenting thing, we're hitting parenting last week today, and we'll sum over the next few weeks. We're really going to dive into just looking at this generation and how do we understand our responsibility regardless of our role, whether we're parents or mentors or coaches. And two books I've been deep in over the last few weeks as well. One is called Generation IY, and this really looks at the shifts and the differences between the last number of generations and our current most recent generation, and how they all influence one another and what we have to know as we think about shaping the next generation. And then also a book called 12 Huge Mistakes Parents Can Avoid. And and we'll look at a few of the mistakes in this, but really there's 10 shifts that we have to make today in order to propel the next generation on to do greater things. And so we're going to be looking at these. If some of you are readers and you love to track with some of the stuff we're tracking, I'm going to be pulling heavily from some of these resources because they're really, really good. But, you know, today, have you ever wondered why, you know, everybody wants a good mom or dad? And when you don't get one, what do you end up doing? You go to therapy, right? You don't have a good mom or dad, you end up in therapy. And so, you know, nobody on the farm goes to therapy. Have you ever noticed that? Like little Piglet, if he doesn't turn out like his dad, like nobody's checking him into therapy. Or, you know, my dog Minnie, our black lab, I mean, she, you know, we separated her from her litter at birth. I mean, no, she's not like damaged for life, I don't think. I mean, you know, Giselle's lions, you know, yeah, you watch Animal Planet, they're not like having family reunions, you know, every year like we need to. There's something, you know, magical and mystical and special about family, about biological family, and as well as about our spiritual family. And so, you know, whether you're a child who's 14 or 54, or you're a parent who's 25 or 85, my goal today is to help us see how, you know, parenting in the physical realm, the here and now physically, actually mirrors the way God parents us in the spiritual realm, and we can actually, you know, borrow from his lead that he gives us in this process. Now, some of the things I'm going to share with you today are what I would call countercultural today to what we think of as normal today. You may disagree with some of them. I'm going to give you a number of applications. You know, these are things we've had in our family, we do in our family. I'm not expecting you to do them. I'm just trying to give examples. But I am going to push and challenge us today and try to get us out of just what the norm is today. So one thing that God does with us and God establishes, we just sang about it in these couple songs a few moments ago, is that he's the most important entity in the family. I mean, God, you know, scripture actually says that God gets all the glory, not the children, not me, but God. And in families today, I just think we've got this backwards. I really do. I think, you know, today we've made kids the center of the family. We've exalted the kids in the family. And parents, I just want to tell you, if you're a parent, you're the MVP in your family, in case you're wondering, all right? You are the most valuable player in your family. And my kids, they'll ask me at times, they're like, "Well, who do you love the most, Dad?" And my answer always is Julie. Your mom. It's always your mom. I mean, you know, she's the most important person in our family to me. And you know, every now and then they'll be like, "Well, why do you guys get to go on vacations together?" And I mean, we take our kids on vacation, but Julie and I, a couple times a year, we get away just the two of us. And I said, it's because we're the most important people. It, you know, like it, love it, don't like it. We're paying for it. And as our relationship goes, so our relationship in our family goes. So today, I want to look at four distinct phases that we must go through as a parent. And I tell you what, these are game changers. They've been game changers for me. I learned these about 10 years ago from one of my mentors, favorite pastors, teachers, authors, a guy by the name of Brian Tome. He's a pastor in Cincinnati. And when I began to look through the lens of these four sequences, it changed the way I parent. And these are sequential. They're kind of chronological. And though you're going to find at times, it's like I'm in one phase and yet I'm also in the other, and you're straddling between the two. But for the most part, these are sequential. And we see these in the Bible. We also see these linked to the character of who God is. All right, and so in a very real sense, as we talk about this, you're going to see, well, this is how God parents us in a spiritual way as well. So the first phase, if you have children, one day we'll have children, have had children, is what's called the nurse phase. And I've got hats for every single one of these because, you know, I don't care. I'm going to do anything short of, you know, looking like an idiot to help you remember these things. And I may have already accomplished that. All right, so the nurse phase. The nurse phase is when you're wiping, when you're, you know, cleaning up drool, you're cleaning up poop, or you're just meeting the needs of children, right? And like a nurse in a hospital, right? What does a nurse in a hospital get other than the paycheck? I mean, what does a nurse get for taking care of the infant ward? Nothing, right? Zero. I mean, that baby never thanks them for like, oh, thanks for cleaning up my drool or putting that IV in me. I mean, never. I mean, you get absolutely nothing. And this is how it is with a parent in the first 3 to 6 months. I mean, you get very little return unless you love the nurse phase. All right? There's virtually no real like return, you know, of reward. Now, first Christmas verse of the year, 2017. Here we go. This is Jesus and Mary. This is what Mary, it says of Mary in Luke chapter 2. It says, and she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling cloths and laid him in a manger. So Mary, see, we see Jesus go through all four of these phases right here, I believe. All right, Mary and Joseph, they nursed Jesus. They took care of him. She physically nursed him. They took care of things he couldn't do for himself. Jesus had blowout diapers as well. Think about it. All right? They had to take care of these things. Now for some of us, we're great nurses. You long to be a nurse. You love being a nurse, which is awesome. But see, one of the problems you may have with your children as they grow up is you're going to want to nurse them their whole life, and they don't want to be nursed. See, what's really annoying is when you're 16 and your mom's still trying to nurse you. All right, that's kind of bothersome. See, a 16-year-old doesn't want to be nursed. 16-year-old wants what? They want freedom. 16-year-old wants they don't want to be coddled. They want adventure. This is the hardest phase for me as we've progressed through our kids. Our kids are now 14, 13, 10, and 8. And I tell you what, when they were little, I mean, I loved when they were infants. I loved that phase. But getting up in the middle of the night, wiping their little rear ends, you know, getting no real feedback from that, I mean, that was very, very hard. It was, for them, it was give, 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 take, 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 with very little reciprocal. And I remember one time, I think it was at a Chili's, one of our kids had a blowout diaper, and I'm in the bathroom, you know, changing it, you know, putting the diaper back on. Some grandfatherly figure walks in and he goes, oh, you know, don't take this moment for granted. It'll fly by before you know it. And I just remember thinking, oh, I hate this. This sucks. I sure hope it flies by. And as I talked about last week, those 1,000 weeks start pouring out real fast. And that grandfatherly man was right. He was absolutely right. Those weeks have just flown by because we're out of it right now. See, here's the thing. God nurses us in the same way. In fact, take a look at the Psalm 131. Here's how it's talked about by the psalmist. He says, I have calmed and quieted myself. I am like a weaned child with its mother. Like a weaned child, I am content. Now, I know, you know, in the Bible, we oftentimes see God predominantly referred to as a male masculine, especially in pronouns. All right, this is one of the times in the Bible where it refers in the pronoun to God as not being male. All right, and God doesn't have genitalia, by the way, in case you're wondering. All right, God is actually equated here to a nursing mother. Look at this. He says, I am like a weaned child with its mother. You know, my wife breastfed all of our kids. I've been around other moms who have breastfed their children. And, you know, there's always a real definitive break, if you've been in an environment where children have been breastfed, where the child is weaned. You know, when that child is weaned, up to that point, that mother is basically a feeding station, right? I mean, that baby's like, give me, give me, give me. You know, they're rooting all the time. All they want to do is eat. You know, I've heard moms say, I just feel like a feeding station every time I'm with my kids. See, it's hard for that infant when you're in a nursing phase to have any kind of intimacy or anything else going on when that mother and child are together until they're weaned. And the mother loves that child, but whenever they're beside their mother, they want to eat. It's like, give me, give me, give me, give me. I just want to eat. I want to be fed. And it's just this I want mentality all the time. And what's interesting is this is kind of how it is with God and us oftentimes, right? I mean, think about it. You know, sometimes in our relationship with God, especially early on, we just want to be nursed. And it's very appropriate at times. I mean, maybe we're hurting or we're broken or we're confused or you're just all mixed up. And God nurses you. And it's ironic. There's actually an attachment that takes place between, you know, parent and child in that phase, in that nursing phase. But if we're not careful, many of us spiritually, we just want God to be our nurse all the time. We don't want anything else. We just want God to take care of every little problem, wipe our rear end when we make a mess. You know, that's all we want. And, you know, and we just kind of suck him dry because we think life's all about us, all about God meeting all my needs. And this is the nursing phase. And it happens both physically and it happens spiritually. Now, the second phase, and you're going to see some of these have real clear delineations, all right? It's like, I clearly know when I enter the next phase. Some of them, it's kind of a gradual thing. This one has a real clear phase. When you exit the nurse phase and you enter the next phase, and then this happens when your child's somewhere around, I don't know, 16 to 24 months old, and you ask him or her to do something, and they respond, and they look at you, and they go, no, no. And as soon as you hear those words, you take the nursing hat off and you become the king or the queen in that child's life. All right? You become the king or the queen. Now think about this. All right? What's a king or queen do? Your job is to bring reality to that child, to articulate reality and the rules with absolute authority. All right? That's what a king or queen does. Now, let me tell you a little secret as a parent. All right, let me tell you something. If you've got a child in your home, let me just remind you of something. Here's the thing. You know more than they do, just in case you're wondering. All right? Now, I know when you get in teenage years, you may begin to wonder. All right, you know more than they do. All right, you actually have more life experience than they do. A couple weeks ago, a couple of my kids came to me with something they wanted to do, and they're asking me how it works. And I'm like, well, this is how it'll go. And they're like, you're crazy, Dad. You don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, listen, I've done this so many times. They went off and did it their way, and they came back, and they're like, Dad, how did you know? I'm like, because I have more life experience than you do. I've been through harder times than they've been through. All right, I understand way more. All right, you need to remember this. Just put that in the back of your mind. See, one of the ways you can bless your child is you can hold them to reality. You can bring reality. It's very, very important. See, in our society today, get this. People don't want us to king and queen our kids. People don't want us to just let our kids do whatever they want, even if it's rebelliously. I've even heard things like parents shouldn't tell their kids no. I'm like, that's stupid. That kid needs to hear the word no. And if you don't believe me, take a look at this scene here from Parental Guidance.
New people.
Hello.
These are my parents. They're going to watch the kids this week.
Oh, welcome to Healthy Tiger. All healthy Pan-Asian food.
Well, what's that?
No MSG, no gluten, no sodium. Just healthy food.
I'm drooling already.
Pan-Asian. It's like me. My mother's Japanese. My father's Chinese. My kids are Korean. And they go to Hebrew day school.
Ivy! How do you ruin Chinese food? Okay. We seem to have an empty chair.
No, that chair's for Carl.
Who's Carl?
Barker's friend.
Oh, how nice. When's he coming?
He's already here.
Hi, Carl. You look great. Did you get a haircut?
Carl is Barker's imaginary friend.
Oh.
He's a kangaroo.
Oh. Maybe we should have eaten at the Outback.
Kids, go wash your hands.
Come on, Carl. Bye, Farton.
Oh, he's in a real testing the boundaries phase.
Plus, he's also a little constipated.
Now you're talking my language. I have some stuff that will blow his mind. They use it to blast out the channel.
Thank you, Lord Arthur. Now, do you have any special instructions for us, like what the kids like to do, what they like to eat?
Yes, Mom, great, thank you. First of all, they don't eat any sugar.
No Carvel? That's the saddest thing I've ever heard in my life.
We tried to introduce just a little bit of sugar, and it was like going off the rails of the crazy train. Oh my gosh.
And there's another subject I'd like to discuss.
Sure, anything.
Your language.
Oh, he won't curse. I'll break his freaking arm.
That's great, but that's not what I meant. You see, there's a way that we talk to our kids. For instance, where you would say no, we would say, consider the consequences. Or where you would say don't, we would say, maybe you should try this. Or where you would say, quit your whining, you're giving me a headache, we would say, use your words. See, that way the child feels that he has value, he has worth, he's heard.
That's a way. Let's order.
It's a way. You know, here's the thing. There's a definitive mark when you choose to king or queen your child. All right, and what king and queening does, what discipline does, is it establishes you as an authority in their life. Take a look at Hebrews. Hebrews 12 says, "My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor be weary when reproved by him. For the Lord disciplines the one he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. For it is discipline that you have to endure. God is treating you as sons." Check this line out. "For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? If you're left without discipline, in which all have participated, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Besides this, we have had earthly fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them." See, God says you need to discipline. We need to discipline our kids. This is what kings do. This is what queens do. They discipline. And in essence, what this writer in Hebrews is saying is when we don't discipline our children, it's as if we're saying, hey, you're not really my child. I don't love you like a child, because that's what a father and a mother does. So when we don't do this, we take the easy way out. It's us saying, hey, I'm not going to jump in and bring a little reality. I'm just going to allow them to figure it out on their own. And here's what's so fascinating about this. Just as a parent, kings and queens, you know, our children, God kings us. I mean, God does the same thing in our relationship with him. I mean, you know, if you're a Christian and you've got some kind of, you know, roadblock, or you're just got a barrier trying to figure, okay, how do I go to the next place? One of the blockages in your life might be that you've never settled in your heart and in your mind that God is really king. All right, we've never settled that he's master, that his way goes. And I mean, we want God to have, like, we want to have these great concepts of feeling loved and, you know, affirmed in our life. But we, in a real sense, we just want God to keep nursing us. See, there's a major thing that happens when we go, no, God, you're king. And I realize that I fall underneath you and you're the authority in my life. See, without this, there is a major, major outage. Now, you know, when this happens, we typically see, you know, adults with whiny behavior, right? I mean, I tell my kids all the time, they're like, why are you treating me this way? I'm like, because I don't want you to be like 40 and be whining like you're 8, right? I mean, you know what I'm talking about, right? Like when somebody doesn't get the job that they wanted in your office, and they're like, I just want a promotion, you know? And they're like, you're like, seriously, pull it together. I mean, I know it's a big deal, but like, get it together. You know, you're like, I just want my presidential candidate to win. You know, we heard that at all recently. No, it's like, life's not all about you. Sometimes it doesn't go your way. This means we haven't settled a king issue in our life. We've realized there's not an authority over us. We think everything revolves around us. Take a look at Ephesians chapter 6, verse 1 and following. Paul says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise." He says, this is the first commandment that actually has a promise attached to it if you do this. He says, "so that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on earth." You're going to end up as friends. You're going to enjoy long life together. So what he says here is kids obey, not kids dialogue. I mean, it blows me away when I'm standing in the checkout line at a store and all of a sudden parents are bartering over whether the kid really deserves a gun. I'm like, just tell them no. You said no. Like, it's not a bartering moment. Why? Because it says when you're the authority, guess what? Things go well. You'll have a long life once they get established in their life that there's an authority. And then he goes on, "Fathers," and this is for mothers as well, "do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and the instruction of the Lord." Now, this is so hard for some of us. And one of the reasons this is so hard is because we were exasperated as kids, right? Maybe we were disciplined in an unhealthy way, or maybe we were disciplined in a wrong way. And it's easy to follow this path. I mean, if you had bad discipline as a kid, you know, from your parents growing up, I mean, you know, that can be very destructive for you. And so one of two things ends up happening. Either you go, well, you know, if you were abused even, that's really, really bad discipline. Guess what abused people do? Abused people abuse, right? Hurt people hurt people. And so maybe you just mindlessly follow that path, or you go to the other end of the continuum where you're like, that was so bad. I'm not disciplining at all. It was terrible. See, we're not to exasperate our children, right? But we're not to create long-term damage with them, but we've got to discipline them in a way that gets them to obey. See, God does this with you and I. God disciplines us to get us to obey. Let me say that again. God wants you to obey, right? He does. Any healthy parent wants his or her child to obey them. Now, let me talk about a few applications on this. See, this application time. So these are things we've done in our family. I'm not saying you should do them in your family. You need to figure out whatever works for you, but it needs to work. All right? You owe it to your children to make sure the discipline works. Now, we've used a number of methods, and I'm not going to list them all, but, you know, we've done things from timeouts to taking privileges away. I did sentences for a summer. Every time they were in trouble, I had to write sentences. I borrowed that from one of my neighbors. We would reward good behavior, positive behavior, because what gets rewarded gets repeated. We duct tape them, their hands and feet, and put them... No, I was just checking to see if you're still tracking with me. We wouldn't do that. We would spank them. In fact, I just had a spanking moment not too long ago with my youngest. And let me say a word about spanking. This doesn't get talked about very often. And listen, I know not everybody's going to agree on this, all right? My goal is not to get you to agree or to spank your child if you don't spank your child. But there's a process to spanking, and it's not quick. It takes about 15 to 20 minutes, and I don't really have time to walk all the way through that process today. But here's what spanking is. It's instantaneous education. That's what happens with spanking. Timeouts, they work for some things, right? I mean, a lot of times, you know, timeouts have minimal impact. Taking devices away or, you know, grounding for a period, they have some impact. But I tell you what, when you spank, it's like touching a hot stove, right? You're like, ooh, man, never doing that again. That's what spanking does. And there's an appropriate way to do it, and there's a non-appropriate way to do it. And by the way, as I'm talking about this, don't email me about this week, all right? Do something productive with your time, really. That's not productive, all right? I'm just telling you. But here's what's really important on this. You don't have to do this, all right? Even though it's biblical, you don't have to do this. But if you don't king and queen your child, if your child doesn't come to realize there is an authority in his or her life and it's you, not only are you going to struggle in relationship with them, they're going to struggle in their relationship with God. They're never going to understand what it means to come underneath another figure in submission. And they're going to have an outage. This is the problem some of us have. We've never allowed God to king us and said, God, you're king, and whatever you say, you know what, I'm going to do it. I mean, I talk to people who have been a Christian for 10 years, you know, baptized, believe the Bible, following Jesus, and yet they've never done the no-brainer thing. When I say no-brainer, I'm not talking easy. I'm talking the no-brainer obvious thing of tithing 10% of their income back to the work of God. They've never got to that level as a disciple. They've never done it. It's a kinging issue. It's a submission issue. This is why many of us have outages with God. We have a rough path when it comes to obedience and submission because we've never said, God, you're king, and what you say goes. And so we struggle with this, and the cards come down in our life, and things get hard, and there's not a depth of maturity there because we've never established that God, you're king. Next phase. Next phase we go through is what's known as the coaching phase. All right, the coaching phase. This is a fun one. This is where I excel in my life. The coaching. See, in the king phase, every king in ancient times would be on the battlefield with his or her warriors, right? I mean, the king would be in the midst of the warriors. He'd be calling the shots, giving direction. That's what kings do. Kings are basically like, hey, you know, you're not qualified yet to make the decision, so I'm going to make them for you. But when you step into coaching phase, and this is somewhere in the tweeners, you know, around 10, 11, 12, when you enter this age range, range, all of a sudden you begin to move into coaching phase where you're no longer on the battlefield with them, making the calls, telling them exactly what to do. You step off the field of play and you're on the sidelines. You're cheerleading. Hey, you can do it. You can do it. We've talked about this. We've given instructions. We've planned. We've strategized. We've talked about the pit holes, the potholes. We've talked about how to win, what a win looks like. We've set guardrails around our children so they have like sidelines to operate within. And this is a major thing. This shift from king, queen to coaching is a major shift that has to take place. And it's a gradual shift as well. This is one of the gradual ones. In fact, here's what 1 Thessalonians, this is what Paul says in 1 Thessalonians 2. He says, "For you know that we dealt with each of you as a father deals with his own children, encouraging, comforting, and urging you to live lives worthy of God who calls you into his kingdom and glory." Look at these words right here, encouraging, comforting, urging. That's what a coach does. See, a coach isn't like laying down the discipline anymore. I mean, now I still, with my older ones even, there's times where I king and queen moments, you know, have king and queen moments with them. I mean, but, you know, there's times where I'll take the privileges of electronics away or they'll lose certain things. And, you know, there's definitely engagement still, but I'm beginning to broaden the field of play so they can make decisions on their own. And Julie and I are coaching them through it. Now, our older two are in this phase. Our third one is kind of entering this phase. She's 10. And I very much am teetering between king and queen and coaching many times. Like, you know, they might come and say, "Hey, I want to go to so-and-so's house whom you don't know and you don't know their parents." And I'm like, absolutely not. Absolutely not. There's no way that's going to happen. If I know them, you will go. All right? I mean, so there's certain things I still trump, but I'm more so laying out the field of play. Julie's laying out the field of play. Took my son Matt on a trip to Cleveland a few weeks ago to see the Cavs play. LeBron James is one of his favorite basketball players. We're Pacer fans, by the way, but he loves LeBron. And so, you know, on our way up, it's a five-hour trip. We'd just gotten out of Wolfpack. So we talked every week during the Wolfpack about the five traits, but we spent those hours on the road, part of them talking about the five traits of a man. And we honed in really specifically on the protector trait. And I said, "Matt, you know, you're getting to an age where you've got to decide, am I going to be a predator or am I going to be a protector?" And I said, "You know, it's not only protecting your life, and it's not only protecting your mom and your sisters and those around you at school who get made fun of or standing up for those who need somebody to stand up for them, but you've got to start protecting yourself sexually. You've got to start protecting somebody you might date down the road sexually." I said, "There's going to be girls, trust me, you're handsome, you're a good-looking kid. If it hadn't happened already, there's going to be girls that want to date you. There's going to be girls somewhere down the road, they're going to just throw themselves at you because they've never had an appropriate father relationship and they're just looking for the affirmation of a male." And I said, "You don't need to only protect you, but you need to protect her and you need to protect her future husband because you're likely not going to be that one." And we talked through the steps of intimacy of, you know, holding hands, to kissing, to open mouth kissing, to, you know, petting, to fondling, to sexual foreplay, to intercourse, oral sex, the whole deal. I mean, we said, what's appropriate a dating relationship? What's the appropriate stage of affection? What's the appropriate things in the steps of intimacy that's only for the context of marriage? And I'm coaching and encouraging, and some of you are going, awkward, right? Hey, we're traveling 75 mile an hour down a highway. It's the best time to talk to your kids about this stuff. They can't go anywhere, right? But I tell you what, when you've nursed and king-queened, and now you're coaching, this is a beautiful conversation. Doesn't mean it always goes the way you want. Doesn't mean it's not awkward at times. But man, it's a beautiful conversation. And this is what I do best. This is what I do here at Crosspoint. I mean, I'm not like a traditional pastor. I'm really a leader coach is what I am. That's what I do with you every weekend. I'm up here, you know, encouraging, giving you insights, trying to steer you in certain directions, miss potholes, things that maybe I can see that you haven't seen if you're new in your faith or further along in your faith. You know, I do this with my staff team. I mean, I'm the king at times, or I'm the ultimate decision maker on certain things, but I relinquish a lot of authority and responsibility to my team based on their leadership capacity. And this is how God parents us as well. It's the coaching phase. And eventually, the goal, the lifelong goal, I believe, is that we get to this final stage, which only happens when our children get to adulthood, which we take off the coaching hat, though you may wear this for a while. There's no hat for this one. This is just what's called becoming a friend, where you just become friends with your kids. And here's the thing. You can't become a friend if the other three sequences haven't happened. And this is where you're just peer-to-peer with your child. This is where you're not building into him or her because they're beneath you, but you're building into one another, mutually encouraging one another, mutually comforting one another, mutually pushing one another. I'm not here with either any of my kids yet because they're still teenagers. See, there's something that takes place in the nursing phase. There's an intimacy that takes place in the nursing phase that creates a desire for us to have that kind of intimacy with the parent-child relationship for the rest of our life in a way that never ends. But we have to go through the stages to where we hopefully become friends. This is why Jesus said this here in John 15. And by the way, Jesus is king, all right? But he still says this to us. Look at what his aspiration is for us as his children. He says, you are my friends if you do what I command. You know why that's so important? Because he says, basically, you've got to go through the king-queen phase before we can ever get to the next phase. All right? Once you establish I'm the authority, he says, I no longer now call you servants because a servant does not know his master's business. Love that word, business. Business. Instead, I've called you friends for everything that I have learned from my Father I've made known to you. He says, there comes a point, not at the beginning, not when I'm nursing you, not even when I'm king-queening you, but eventually we get to the place where we're your friends. And guess what? See, the king understands certain things that everybody else doesn't understand. He says, there's going to come a place when you've gone through the appropriate phases and you've made me the authority in your life, and all of a sudden you're operating in a different trajectory where guess what? I'm going to let you win on the bigger things of the kingdom because we're friends. And here's what's so cool about God. God still nurses us when we need it. God still kings, queens us at times when we need that. God still coaches us, but he says, but the goal is that we get to where we're friends, where you're partnering with me in the lifelong, you know, furthering of what God's doing in the world. And yet there's a process, and sometimes we don't get it. Sometimes we're like, God, why am I going through this right now? Why are you letting me go through this phase? And I know you're encouraging me and coaching me. You know why God's doing it? Because he wants to grow us. Because he wants to stretch us. This past week, I think it was Tuesday evening, we were at Olio Fields across the street, softball complex where our daughters play softball almost every night this week. I think it was Tuesday. Our older two wanted to go to the concession stand because that's why you go to the softball fields, right? To go to this concession stand. And so they went up and got popcorn and came back and sat down, and we were there for like, you know, 2.5-3 hours that night. And our 10-year-old Maggie, for some reason she's the focal of all my stories today, she takes a big old handful of popcorn and spits it out all over the place. She's like, it's terrible. I'm like, well, what's wrong with it? She's like, it's too salty. And so she's like, here, Dad, you eat it. I'm like, well, why would I want that? And so I hand it back to her. I said, no. I said, they brought their own money. I usually make them, unless we're having dinner there, they have to buy their own stuff. So I'm like, why would you waste a dollar? Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go back up there, and I want you to ask them if they would replace it for you. She's like, will you do it for me? I said, no, I want you to do this. So I coached her through it. I talked her through, here's what I want you to do. Who's going to go with her? Okay, Meredith is going. So the 8 and 10-year-old are going. And the concession stand's a few fields down. But, you know, it's a common place. I wouldn't do this at, like, a Colts game, all right, where, like, anything could happen. I mean, I know the area. They know the area. And so I coached her through it. I said, here's how you're going to handle this. Just explain to them what happened, and you would like it replaced. And she looks at me, and she does that little, like, you know, 10-year-old girl thing where she goes, but, Dad, would you just do it for me? And it'd be so easy in that moment for me to be like, yeah, you know, you're right. I just need to do this for you. But I said, no, Maggie, I want you to learn to advocate for yourself. I want you to go up and do what I've coached you to do. She goes up and they're gone like 10 minutes or so, 11 minutes. I'm kind of watching. I could see them up there at one point. I can't see them now. And I'm just about ready. I'm thinking, man, do I go up and see if everything's going okay? Because see, if I would have walked up next to them and stood there and watched, I would have blown the whole moment, right? Would have blown it. So a couple minutes later, they start walking back. I mean, she's like, so proud, that chest is out, you know. She sits down, and I tell you what, I was so proud of her in that moment. I mean, she grew like 6 inches right there by advocating for herself. She takes a big old scoop of popcorn, chews it up, spits it out. It's terrible, it's still bad. And so, all right, we're just going to throw it away. But the point is that she grew in that moment. She grew. Why did I do this? Because I want to elevate her to my level. She's not there right now, but I want her to be able to do what I can do. I don't want to have to advocate for her whole life. You realize this is happening today? More and more college professors report that parents are calling their professors to advocate for grades than ever in the history of, like, education ever. We're going to talk about this in the next few weeks. I want her to learn to advocate for herself. I'm telling you, this is the process. And for those of you who are parents of adult children, all right, if you've got adult children, your kids are 20-something, 30-something, 40-something, and you're still nursing and king-queening, let me tell you something. They don't want to be coached anymore. They don't want to be kinged and trumped anymore. They're not looking for you to like take care of every little thing. You know what they want? They want to be friended. That's what they're looking for. In fact, you know, when you get on the phone with them, I mean, they don't want to hear career advice unless they ask for it. They don't want to hear like, well, are you married yet? You dating anybody? I mean, they don't want that. You know, they don't want that. I mean, you know, if you have grown kids, how do you know if you're friending or not? I mean, if you're at like a family wedding and your son or daughter is a grown adult and they're old enough to drink and they've had too much to drink, how do you handle that? Do you handle it like you would as if it were your best friend? Or do you, you know, I can't believe you're drunk again. And, you know, I mean, if you don't approve of who they're dating, I mean, how do you talk to your grown children the way you would your best friend? That's a filter to use. I mean, I have a friend who is grown, 30s, probably 40s now. And every time he goes home, he's treated like a 10-year-old. Guess how many times he wants to go home every year? Zero. Never. That's why when Maggie hears that line in that song, she goes, don't worry, Dad. I'll come home at least once or twice a month. I mean, it needs to be appropriate, you know, and whatever her and her husband figure out. But that idea of wanting a lifelong relationship with the children, with a parent, I think this is how God designed it. This is why God is so serious about the process, nursing, kinging, coaching, friending. At the same time, this is what God does with us. All right? He doesn't want to coddle you your whole life. He wants you to grow up. He wants to sharpen you so that you can like get on purpose and fulfill the things you were created to fulfill. I mean, this is the amazing thing he created for you. And I tell you what, these are game changers. These were game changers for me 10 years ago when I heard them and began to implement them. And so it's changed the way that I parent today. And my goal is that I'm lifelong friends. Julie and I are lifelong friends with our kids one day. So as we have been going through the more, I want you to take out your connection card. There's some next steps on the back. And as we've been going through this more, I just trust that God's been landing something with every one of us this morning. You know, maybe it's just returning next weekend. Maybe it's saying, hey, I want to continue. Something's connecting. And if you're new, I just encourage you to come back like 3 or 4 times in a row and just see if God doesn't connect, you know, over a few weeks with you to figure out if there's a place you want to connect with. You know, maybe it's identifying. Maybe God's just been nudging you and saying, hey, here's the phase you're in and you really need to be moving. Or here's the phase you're in and you need to be thinking about these things. Maybe you need to evaluate. God, how do you want me to be parenting this week? What phase am I in? Or maybe if you're a grown adult and your parents are still, you know, kinging you. I meet 40-year-olds all the time who don't really have a good relationship with their parents because they're constantly kinging. Maybe this has explained some things, and maybe there's a conversation you need to have with your adult parents. I'm just confident God's been landing some things. So whatever that is for you, whatever your next step is, we give these to you because, you know, God wants us to get this one right. He wants us to get all these things right, but this one especially. Let's go ahead and stand. Let me pray for us. Heavenly Father, I just thank you today for this time we've had. You know, I've put some stuff out there. I know we don't all agree with everything. I just pray that you would help us to make the applications that you're nudging our hearts on right now. Help us to know what to do with the things we've heard this morning. And God, to also see that this is the process you use in our lives to grow us to a new place. And so God, I just pray that you would encourage us enough, God, to keep us going forward. And God, help us to make enough mistakes this week to stay leaning on you, to stay trusting you. And God, with our children, God, protect them from lifelong mistakes, but help them make enough that they learn and grow along the way. And God, I just pray that you would help us to get this one right. For us, for our kids, for our long-term relationships, but also for you, God. So God, just give us wisdom on this, I pray.